My name is Daisha Clay. I'm the audio librarian here at Classical 91.7. While I'm a real librarian, I have a deep, dark
secret.
I know very little about classical music. I grew up listening to rock, and I know something about jazz. But when it comes to classical, but I really want to learn. So, every week on this show, a classical music expert will give me a piece of classical music they think I should know, and then we'll discuss it. Come learn with me in the classical classroom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Classical Classroom. I'm Daisha Clay, and here with me today, all the way from Atlanta, Georgia, actually in Atlanta, Georgia, is Mr. Mark DiClaudio. Mark is a trumpet player. He is a public school music teacher, a Peabody Conservatory graduate, and inventor of the buzz clip, which is a patented tool for training brass players. He's a performer. He's played all over the U.S. as a member of the Monumental Brass Quintet. He's taught masterclasses on every level throughout the country. And he's been taught by the likes of Wynton Marsalis, David Federle, and William Vacchiano. Mark, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me. Mo, you made me sound good just then.
Yeah, well, I mean, you have accolades, man. I can't help that. So what are we going to be talking about today?
We're going to be talking about trumpet. And when it changed from being just a fanfare instrument into being a melodic and virtuoso instrument. And I was going to talk a little bit about the Haydn Trumpet Concerto and some of the things that inspired me.
This is very exciting because I was once a trumpet player myself. And
yeah, I got wind of that. And Todd told me you were going to be playing on the show today.
Todd told you wrong.
I'll wait while you get your horn ready. It's good. We're all right.
I don't want to brag, but I was first chair in junior high in both 7th and 8th grade band.
7th
and 8th
grade band.
Andy Ladd and I constantly warred for first and second chair. And Andy lost most of the time. I think he was a little bitter.
Well, trumpet players aren't very competitive, so I'm not sure if he...
My dad actually played too.
Oh, he did.
Yeah,
actually,
yeah.
He
was actually really serious. He played all through like high school and toured around a bit. And then I don't know why he gave it up. But I didn't actually intend to follow in his footsteps. I just kind of got pushed into it. I always wanted to play drums from the time I was very small. And they were like, no, here, use this instead. And here's a mute.
this may actually horrify you, but you and I are very much alike.
Oh, yeah? I am horrified.
I wanted to play drums, too.
Yeah?
My dad was a trumpet player who was really good, too. And my mom said, well, you know, why don't you start with a melodic instrument, and then later on you can go and try drums later. And I, too, was first chair in 7th grade and first chair in 8th grade band.
Nice.
We are twins.
It's like we've lived the same life. Whoa. Well, I know that one of the things we were going to talk about is the Haydn Trumpet Concerto. And I listened to that a little bit yesterday, and it's funny. I realized that I don't actually know anything about Haydn, except for that he is on a lot of internet memes about classical music. That's it.
Yeah, he's he wrote a lot of music for a lot of people and a lot of instruments. For trumpet, he actually wrote the first real trumpet concerto we know for a melodically based instrument. And that was a long time ago.
When did Haydn live?
He was born in 1732. He died in 1809.
Where did he live?
In Vienna.
Oh, okay.
Austria.
Okay. Gotcha.
You know, like Sound of Music. That would give you a good picture of what it was.
Sure.
Yeah.
So this trumpet concerto, he wrote for many instruments. The trumpet concerto is just one of many. Why does this trumpet concerto stand out?
Well, originally, trumpets were just used to essentially announce kings and queens into their court, and they were used for ornamental flourishes, but not thought of as a melodic instrument
okay.
either.
Okay, So they start out as these instruments in like the courts. They have like flags hanging from them, like in Monty Python, that whole bit. So like what happened from there?
Well, there was a trumpet player in Vienna named Anton Weidinger. I'm sure I didn't say his name correctly. I apologize. But he, in the 1790s, he wanted to have more of a melodic or virtuosic role in music as a trumpet player. And he commissioned Franz Joseph Haydn and Johann Hummel to write trumpet concertos. Haydn's was first, and it's still one of the favorites, and it's a great, beautiful piece of music.
Cool. We should hear some of it.
All right.
This piece, it actually sounds very fanfare-y.
It does start off fanfare-y. Actually, when Haydn wrote it, he took some of the elements, the fanfares that people were familiar with. You'll hear some in early music. You'll also hear fanfares throughout as far as Beethoven. Sorry, I'm listening to it along with you there. I love this recording. Actually, the recording that we're listening to right now is a Wynton Marsalis recording. And this was the recording that I heard first that inspired me to learn how to play.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
That's super cool. So you heard this piece and you were like, I must play the trumpet?
Actually, I heard this piece, this exact recording, so much that I learned how to play the whole concerto along with the recording before I ever even saw the music.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's really
cool. I couldn't
really
play it nearly this well, even today. No, but I learned the entire thing. It was just, I loved it.
Yeah. That's crazy. So like, what about it appealed to you so much?
Well, some of the things that appealed to me about this appealed to me about trumpet. There's an infinite number of possibilities in sound and color and intonation and response and attack. So many different ways that you can address a note to paint the color that you're looking for. And I think Wynton Marsalis in this recording, I think he's so consistent with the way he plays that you can hear the different nuances in his attacks, and you can hear the way that he shapes his phrase. But the way that he addresses his notes, his sheer virtuosity and control over the instrument were just amazing. And then when I heard that he did it when he was like 13 or 14, and that was how old I was when I first heard it, it made me mad. I thought, man, I'm 13 or 14, I should be able to do this. So
yeah, I was totally able to do this at 13. Totally.
Well, I tried my hardest. I didn't say I was good, but I did give it a good try.
I think I was still learning scales at that point. So Haydn writes this piece, and it's a hit. Like, how is it received?
Instantly. Yeah, instantly and forever. This is actually this guy, the guy that commissioned it, Anton Weidinger. He made his whole career out of traveling all over, playing this and the Hummel Concerto. Actually, he could do that because no one else could play it, because no one else had this instrument that he made. He actually took one of those longer instruments that I had mentioned from earlier Baroque style music, and he drilled holes in it that were kind of like, they wound up calling it the keyed bugle, but it looked kind of like a cross between like a trumpet and a saxophone or a flute, because it had these different keys and holes that opened and closed the different areas on the instrument for to let out the different overtones to get the chromatic scale.
So basically, it's one of those big, like, fanfare things.
Sort of. They did wrap it up that was more... It looked more like a bugle or a trumpet that you'd see today, but with, like, saxophone-looking keys on it.
Well, so this piece, like, really began the evolution of the trumpet. I mean, you kind of addressed that at the beginning, but, like, really, the physical evolution of the trumpet began with this piece.
Yeah, and...
That's freaking cool.
He did change the perception from a fanfare and flourish instrument to a chromatic, virtuosic, melodic instrument.
Yeah.
And now you had these chromatic possibilities where you could play some of the notes that were never before available. He also put in a lot of other simply sounding chromatic runs, but I'm guessing Haydn just wanted to make sure that they wouldn't go unnoticed, that now that in a normal register, a trumpet was playing chromatically.
Explain to me what chromatic actually means and what an overtone actually is. Because I think I kind of understand it, but maybe I don't.
Okay. Everybody knows what a piano looks like. There are white keys and black keys. And if you're playing all in the key of C, you'll be playing all the white keys. But chromatic means you can play all of the possibilities, which are the white and black keys. A musician would actually say, instead of only being able to play whole step, half step, whole step, whole step, whole step, half step, which is a major scale, it could be then all half steps. And that's the next key that's available, whether it's white or black key, the closest one.
Okay. Okay, I think I got it.
There will be a test later.
So tell me, what is an overtone?
Overtone is where the vibrations in your sound overlaps inside the instrument at different nodal points in the instrument. Like when the vibrations meet with the other vibrations, and depending on how high or low you're playing in your instrument, they kind of meet each other at different spots.
Huh.
And when the higher you play, the different spots meet and creates more notes the higher you play, because they meet more often, they're more intense.
Okay, anyway, I totally tripped you up. You were on a roll. We're talking about, so we've got Haydn, we've got Hummel, they've written these pieces, and this Feitinger guy has taken the pieces he's commissioned, he's run with them, and he's wildly famous. Chicks dig him. What happens next?
Well, trumpet is no longer limited to fanfares. We become melodic instruments. More people write music for melodically based trumpet instead of just fanfares. And here we are today. Wynton Marsalis is a perfect example of so many different things that you can do on an instrument. Here he is, this fantastic jazz player and a fantastic classical player. And through that, he's been able to express so many different ways to make music from one instrument.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, this sounds... I couldn't believe that was Wynton Marsalis, because I'm only familiar with his jazz recordings, really. And I was kind of blown away by that sound that he was making. I was like, no, that's not Wynton Marsalis.
Actually, it was the first time I met him. I was at a place called Blues Alley in Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. And it was when I was in high school. And I had bought the Wynton Marsalis, Raymond Lepard English Chamber Orchestra recording of him playing the Haydn and the Hummel, and I don't remember if I got it for my birthday or what. That's the only recording I had of him, and I took it to Blues Alley, and I was listening to him play jazz, and I took his classical album to sign because it was the only thing I had for him to sign. But it was really cool. I got a chance to meet him and tell him how much he inspired me as a player. And I took a couple of lessons with Winton in New York when I was in college, mm-hmm. and which was way too long ago. the lesson was kind of simple. It was essentially just good basic playing, mm-hmm. where he would. I believe the first thing he had me play was the Herbert L. Clark study, Technical Studies, number 30. If you're a trumpet player, you'll know what that is. And it's in the key of A. It's low, it's awkward to finger, it's difficult to play fast. And we spent maybe 15, 20 minutes just playing that to make it sound great. And that gave me a great insight to his level of commitment to precision and just making the instrument do what it should do. Mm-hmm. But I had a lesson once with somebody, and this was one of the things that stayed with me throughout everything I've ever done. I had a lesson with Roger Voisin up in Boston.
I'm not familiar.
Roger Voisin was a principal trumpet in the Boston Symphony.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Years ago. He said to me, what do you think of when you think of phrasing? And I, of course, I came up with all the trumpet names that I could come up with. And he said, no. You think of phrasing, you think of Frank Sinatra. And I thought, holy cow, that's perfect. And he did. And Frank Sinatra could sing a consonant. I remember one recording in the 60s when Nelson Riddle was writing for him.
Uh-huh.
I remember he sang an F with just a F sound.
Yeah.
And it was so musical. It was crazy.
Even one sniff, it would bore me to
riff thickly too. Nobody could phrase like him.
That's a great, I love that idea of bringing that sort of lounge singer jazzy sensibility to just the understanding of what phrasing is. It's kind of cool. I dig it.
Yeah. Essentially it's how long can you draw an idea and engage a listener, whether it's classical, jazz, rock, pop, doesn't matter.
Yeah. I get a kick out of you. So we've touched on the trumpet and its evolution and how it kind of came to evolve. But I also wanted to talk, and I think you were going to talk to me about a little bit about music education, because that's what you do in a lot of ways. You're a public school music teacher, but you've also taught master classes to people at all levels. And so I wonder if you could talk about your experience of that. And also, I kind of wanted to talk about the importance of music education.
Oh, I could talk forever about this. music education is getting watered down, in my opinion. Just because it's not part of this standardized test or that standardized mm-hmm. test, I think a lot is being missed. There are some things you should do just because. You should say please. You should say thank you. This is cultural. It's social. It's international. It's intelligent. Mm-hmm. It's creative. Mm-hmm. There are so many aspects to music and all the arts.
And something that, you know, I've heard a lot of different news stories, and people who are really, you know, big supporters of the arts in schools often talk about the fact that it's not just about learning the music itself. It's how your brain thinks in different ways. You know, it's not just learning facts and spitting them back out. It's learning to do things like phrasing. It's learning how to play an instrument. Those sorts of skills they develop your mind, they strengthen those parts of your mind that, you know, you can take outside of the music room. It brings a whole different dimension to your
it
brain
totally does.
And its development.
For example, in social development, I actually, in my class here today, I was talking with some third graders about communication and about compassion and about patience and about general child growth things that are hopefully supporting what they're receiving at home as well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can't have a child playing, you know, banging away on a drum while another child is playing a melody on a xylophone instrument. You know, the drummer's going to be too loud, the xylophone's going to be too soft. So they have to understand where they fit, when they are a focus, when they're a support. And when you have a chance to improvise or to create something that someone else has to respond to, there has to be a certain amount of understanding, a certain amount of background and history to just your communication circle that they're going to respond to in the way that you're hoping.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and that sort of nonverbal, intuitive, experiential learning is so important, I think. Like,
yeah,
it's absolutely key to just functioning in the world, you know?
And living
in harmony with people, you know?
It's a focus if you're a guidance counselor. It's a focus if you're a PTA member or a parent. And it's a focus if you're a teacher, but it's not the focus. Mm-hmm. It's secondary to raising test scores in the whole...
I feel like a lot of our public education system is definitely moving in the direction of what can be quantified, what can be measured, and the arts are often not quantifiable with graphs and charts and things like that.
Absolutely.
And so because of that, they're considered less important by people who find quantifiable things very important, you know.
And yet as a public school music teacher, we are one of the few classes in the building that collects all the students together at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
When communication, when self-control, when intrapersonal respect is critical, it's so much overlooked because it's not easily quantifiable what we do.
Right. And I know there are people out there who are, they're trying to measure those things so that, you know, the arts and music can sort of compete with these quantifiable things.
And how can it be used? How can it be used for potential college scholarship or
right.
profit?
How can it be used to get to whatever the next step is? How can you illustrate that this is important in a concrete way, get you to the next phase of your life, yada, yada.
Yeah. How can it add? How can it add to something? How about this is essentially the equivalent of stopping to smell the roses?
Well,
roses are still beautiful. They still smell great. But if you can't quantify why you would actually stop to smell a rose, then why should you? It doesn't make sense.
Well, and it's funny because if you think about it, I mean, if your concern is just getting from the next phase of your life to the next phase and stockpiling lots of things, some might say that that's not actually experiencing your life, but just moving through it until you get to the end in an efficient way, you know, like what music and the arts do are allow you to experience the moment, to allow you to experience the actual living of life and the exploration of what that means and new ideas and things like that.
Live your life. Don't just live in your life.
Yes, exactly. Don't just live in your life. I like that. All right, Mark. Well, thank you very much for being on the Classical Classroom today. It was a really interesting discussion, and these pieces and this history were amazing. Are you there?
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were doing your wrap.
No, I said, thanks for being on the show.
Oh, thank you very much, Daisha, for having me.
All right, everybody, for more Classical Classroom, go to houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom. You can also find us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And now, drumroll. On social media, that's right. Classical Classroom has entered the 21st century. You can find us on Twitter and Tumblr. Wherever you look us up, follow us, like us, give us wildly, unnecessarily positive reviews, etc. This is too much to remember. Just go to our webpage, which, again, is houstonpublicmedia.org/classroom. You'll find all the helpful links and buttons you can stand, and then some. Thanks to Todd Tiny Holslander for twiddling knobs, to program director Sinjin Flynn for squeezing us and hugging us and naming us George. Thanks to Mark DiClaudio for being on the show. Thanks to me for saying words. And thanks to you for listening. We'll catch you next time.